Welcome back to The Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley.
I'm Rias Hall.
Fun fact, that theme music is being played on my phone, which I hold it up to the microphone.
And wave it around. He waves it around, too.
That's so it fades out in an aesthetically pleasing manner.
Are you pleased aesthetically?
It fades out by me pulling it farther from the microphone and kind of turning it so it points in a different direction.
Wow. That's audiology.
I like how impressed you sounded, as though you weren't always looking at me and judging every time I do it.
I never judge you on your ability to hold a phone. You've been holding phones since you were a child.
You're allowed to judge me positively, you know.
Oh, it's a trick.
Yep. And you failed.
Failed.
Well, good banter. Let's get into the show.
All right.
So, lead topic, making it.
We're going to talk about making it.
Yeah, that's a 1980s kid tries to get laid movie, right?
Yeah. I think he goes to Mexico.
Probably.
Or is that The Last American Virgin? I'm very confused. Every movie in the 80s was about somebody trying to lose their virginity.
Yep. Making It is a brand new television show on a major network, and it's in prime time.
A prime time show? What's it about?
Well, you would think that it would be outside of our purview, but it is about people who make things. It's a crafting show, and it's hosted by Amy Poehler, love her, and Nick Offerman.
Love him. Rawr.
One thing that's fun about this show is I think it kind of undercuts Nick Offerman's public image. Like, because he was Ron Swanson in Parks and Recreation, people assume he's very manly and rugged. But he does a lot of giggling on this show, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, he gets to be more himself, which is... I'm not going to say he's not manly and rugged.
Oh,
he is manly and rugged, but he's also very silly, which I enjoy.
Yes.
I think it's a nice contrast.
This show is firmly in our wheelhouse, so before we get into it, let's talk about other craft shows we have enjoyed.
Oh, well, one of the first ones I watched was hosted by Jason Jones, who later went on to become a correspondent for The Daily Show.
Yes.
I think he's married to Samantha Bee in real life.
I believe so.
And it was called Craft Corner Deathmatch, and it was awesome. They would be given a crafting assignment and set loose in a stack of craft supplies, and they would have like a very short amount of time to complete something. And it was always disastrous.
And Jason Jones was selling everything as hard as he could. And like he sounded like he was taking the deathmatch thing seriously.
Yeah, I loved that. He made that show great. It didn't run very long, so.
No. Well, I think partly it was because he got onto The Daily Show.
That could have been.
Like, he was really funny on that show. And the crafting was what you would expect if people were given 20 minutes to hot glue something together while Jason Jones screamed at them.
I could totally do that.
Right? Like,
I would have won that show.
It was a show that you looked at it and looked fun to be on more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other craft show we watched, of course, was Craft Wars that Tori Spelling hosted.
Which was basically Cupcake Wars with hot glue.
Yeah, it was the...
Don't eat those hot glue-covered cupcakes. They're not very tasty.
It was the pure Cupcake Wars model.
Three rounds.
Yep. You start with this many people. After each round, somebody goes home, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was okay. She seemed genuinely into crafting, which was nice.
Yeah. She was a good hostess. I think she was super pregnant at the time.
She was, yeah.
I don't remember much of what was made on that show, but somebody made a chair out of surfboards that was really interesting.
I vaguely remember a lot of styrofoam balls.
Oh, yeah.
I think...
That show was heavily invested in the styrofoam ball market.
Yeah. So...
Oh, and one of their judges was a glitter expert.
Oh, that's right! They had a glitter expert.
Which I thought was amazing, and that should be my job.
Making It is a much more serious show than either of those. Craft Corner Deathmatch was enthusiastically not serious. Craft Wars took its crafting seriously, but also it was mostly just because Tori Spelling liked crafts.
Yeah.
Making It, I feel like they're trying to be very serious and respectful. And
some of the artists they have on that show are doing amazing
things. Yeah, that's the thing. It's not... I think that's what I was trying to think of. It's not home crafters so much as these are professional level crafters.
There's woodworkers. There's a guy that does these paper cutting things that are incredible.
Yeah. Everybody has their own medium, which is a little weird because they all have the same time limit.
Right, because you get everybody like that. There's an Asian guy on there who does these incredibly complex things. And then one of the other competitors was obviously a grandma.
Yeah. And it just feels like some things take longer than others, even...
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That aspect kind of reminded me of work of art, where they would say, here is a very broad topic. And then some people would say, well, what I do is pottery, so I have to make this clay and then fire it. And then somebody else was like, well, I just take pictures of myself without a shirt and explain how that relates to this latest challenge.
That lady was kind of annoying.
She was amazing in her
one
ability.
One of the artists on there, I keep running into his work, though. One of them, Sucklord, is super successful. So, good for him.
Yeah.
But his thing is he paints action figures and makes cases for them. And that's a really weird thing to fit into a competitive show where you're just given a theme.
One of the themes, this is the theme I always bring up, was that they were given a ride in a Lexus, because that was the sponsor that week.
Episode, yeah.
And we're told, your theme is, take inspiration from the Lexus. And it was just the dumbest, most on-the-nose.
So awful.
And so, again, I think that was the season Sucklord was on. It was like...
That was only one season.
I think there were two.
I hope there were two. I wish there were more, because that show was dumb. It was more of a show about writing your artist statement.
Yeah.
It's like, how can I claim that this nonsense is related to the theme? Let's see.
That's the show I want to be on. I would be so good on a show where they give me random nonsense and told, you get to fill in this one index card with information to explain why this is art and related to the theme. Doesn't that sound like something that I would be good at?
That is something you would be good at. Why didn't I make you do that when I had that art show last summer?
So that show was very pretentious in what I think is a good way. Making it is...
I don't think making it is pretentious. It's got an honest quality, and the people do really good work. It's most of them.
It takes itself seriously, which I like.
Right, but it's not... It's hosted by Amy Poehler, and she's adorable.
Yeah. Her role on the show is that she knows nothing about nothing. So she's asking questions like, so you punch holes out of your paper with something called a hole punch? Yes. How does that work exactly?
Yeah, she does stuff like that.
Which, we know you're not that dumb, Amy, but she lays it on a little thick.
She lays it on really thick, and it's super fun. And
there are scenes where she and Nick Offerman are just hanging around outside... doing dumb puns.
Yeah. I really like it. I'm looking forward to watching more of it.
Yeah.
I really love competitive crafting shows, so I'm in on it even if it's terrible, but so far it looks pretty good.
Yeah. Like, Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman are both delightful. I do sometimes, I feel bad saying this because I love Amy Poehler, kind of wish Amy Sedaris were on the show instead.
Because, I wish Amy Sedaris would come in as a guest judge.
Yeah, because she knows everything about crafting, too, and she's delightful. And
it's true.
We could get Amy Sedaris.
Another show that people who like crafts should watch is At Home with Amy Sedaris. She has a little crafting segment in each episode.
Describe it to me.
Well, it starts off in the morning, and Amy has a theme for each show. And she will come out and she'll give a little talk to the camera because she's the hostess. And then there are little segments throughout the day, like how to cook a fancy dinner for some executives who are coming over.
Sure.
Is one episode. There is an episode about human sexuality where she brings in, I think, a massage expert. It's one of the guys that used to be on Strangers with Candy.
Paul Dinello, probably?
It is Paul Dinello.
Sure, good.
Paul Dinello in a long ponytail wig.
Stephen Colbert's a little too
busy.
Talking
about Tantra. No, Colbert's on there.
Oh, good, good.
Lots of really famous people show up because it's a fun show to be on. I don't know if it's still on the air. I'm watching it slowly on demand. But it's a lot of fun. And if you like crafting, there's crafting in there. And if you like Amy Sedaris, there's plenty of her. And who doesn't like Amy Sedaris? Come on.
Anyway, Making It is also clearly, like, aesthetically inspired by the Great British Bake Off.
Like, right. They have their set, which is a barn with a bunch of crafting areas in it, is very much the same layout as the Great British Baking Show layout. And it's all the same. It's brightly colored, and it looks like a pleasant place, like the tent does.
Except, unlike the Great British Bake Off, people have to leave the barn occasionally, because crafting sometimes needs space.
Yeah, sometimes you gotta go outside to use the big whatever that is.
Crafting thing. Saw.
A saw. The band saw.
One final note on Making It. I had my eye on the clock. 10 minutes from the start of the first episode to the first appearance of Hot Glue.
Oh, that's exciting. We should track that in all the future episodes.
Yeah, Hot Glue is an important element of crafting.
We will be seeing Hot Glue. We'll be seeing a lot of Hot Glue.
Yeah.
You know who should be a sponsor of that show? A Hot Glue company.
Nice. Nailed it. Face Off, meanwhile. We are currently between part one and part two of the series finale.
And I am bummed, because it's the series finale.
I've liked this entire series since episode one. I will be sad to see it go.
And when I was doing some research today, I found out so much more about the Westmore family, and now I fear them.
Tell them what you were doing research on.
Well, I present movies at senior centers, and for October, we were looking for kind of an older horror movie, and we went with something called Island of Lost Souls, which is from 1932, and it's got amazing... It's an adaptation of Island of Dr. Moreau, and it's got amazing creature makeup in it. So I went to see who did the makeup, and it was a Westmore.
Wally Westmore?
Wally Westmore. Now, Wally Westmore is the son of George Westmore. George Westmore came over from the UK and started the first ever makeup crew that worked with a studio.
Yeah.
Before that, actors did the, well, you know, Lon Chaney did his own makeup. But they didn't really have professional makeup people.
It was people coming over from the theater, because movies were brand new. So it was guys like Lon Chaney who, like you say, just did their own makeup.
Yeah. So Westmore was the first one to start a makeup department that worked specifically with studio. And then his sons had sons. And then... the Westmore Westmores, and now there's the Westmore that hosts Face Off.
Yeah, Michael Westmore, who, as I mentioned, like did everything in Star Trek, and there are still Westmores everywhere.
Oh, yeah. George Westmore had four sons, all of whom went into makeup, and all of whom had their own kids. So, yeah, it's fascinating. So I didn't know that much about them. Other than that, their name was pretty famous. Their entire family has a star on the Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
There's just a star that says Westmore family, and people are like, oh, yeah, those guys are amazing.
They did way more for movie makeup than Max Factor did, but Max Factor also had the line of consumer makeup.
Right. Max Factor's leveraged their theatrical makeup because, look, it's a lovely woman. She looked great on camera. It must be the makeup. And Max Factor leveraged that into consumer sales. The Westmores just glued stuff to people for generations.
I love the Westmores.
I do too.
So,
and I'm going to miss them on my television.
Yeah. So getting to Face Off now. The two-part finale, the challenge is to make wildly whimsical creatures. Allegedly, what they're doing is through the looking glass and what Alice found there, which is the second of Lewis Carroll's Alice books. And I was excited because normally Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass just get conflated because there's no real difference between them.
Yeah, it's easy to conflate them. I think even Lewis Carroll conflated them.
Yeah. Technically, Alice in Wonderland is based on cards and Through the Looking Glass is based on chess pieces.
Oh yeah, it's the chess piece one.
But even halfway through this episode, everyone's just calling it Wonderland, because, come on, it's Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, it's Wonderland. And they were given a list of characters they had to make, none of whom I remember from the book.
No, they were all described as new characters in the Alice world.
Right.
After Alice has gone through the mirror.
And now, they're individual challenges, so everybody has to make their own creatures, yeah, theoretically.
They all have a couple helpers from people who were on the season. Nobody's right. Thankfully, nobody acts that surprised.
No, they all know that those guys are coming back. They always come back. They're like ghosts.
Yeah, this is how these shows work, especially Face Off. And this is an all-star season, so these guys especially know it. So, Walter got tea time and had to make the Lollipop Ballerina and the Ginger General.
I might throw up just from the term Lollipop Ballerina. I hate that.
Matt had the Questionable Queen, so he had to make the Porcelain Prince and the Tin Jester. And Jordan got Garden Game, so he had to make the Dapper Grasshopper and the Spring Fox.
Oh, boy.
Now, before we get into the details, I want to say all of these creatures sound a lot more like Oz than Wonderland to me.
Oh, they do. They sound so much like Oz creatures.
Like, Dapper Grasshopper, that is just Professor Wogglebug.
Oh my god, I wish they had to do a Professor Wogglebug. I love him so much. He's thoroughly educated.
He is, and highly magnified. Ginger General, there is literally an Oz character named General Ginger.
I know, and she is awesome.
Yeah.
She leads an army of revolt.
Yeah, of ladies who have had it. Although, to be honest, Oz isn't that patriarchal to begin with.
Well, not with Ozma and all, but these ladies are normal married ladies.
Yeah.
And they have a good point.
They have hat pins.
Those are knitting needles that they stick in their hair, yeah, and they use as weapons.
And, you know, Porcelain Prince. There are people made of china in the Oz books, and there was that china doll
in the Ozma movie, in the Wizard of Oz movie, the one with
the James Franco one?
Yeah, The Great and Powerful Oz is what that's called.
And there were like two things I liked in that movie, and it was how that china girl looked and the opening credits.
Yeah, the opening credits were beautiful, and the china girl was cool.
Yeah.
But I remember nothing else. Oh, I think that someone had a really good hat in it that I recall.
My major objection to that movie was that it had real tone issues. Like, it would be like, wacky, 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 and now a scene of somebody genuinely afraid she's going to die. And then back to wacky, 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 yeah, wacky.
Yeah, you gotta balance that. You gotta transition between it.
So there are some bad looks so far, and it's only part one of the finale.
Right, so what they've had to do is construct their looks and do a camera test. And then after the camera test, the director explains to them what changes they need to make. Like, this makeup is too dark, it doesn't show up against this set, or
your Ginger General does not look like Ginger or a general, and it's just a big, fat, scary guy.
It's a big, flat, fat, floppy thing that looks like a pile of poop.
They didn't...
Literally. I'm very sorry, but it is poop with a face.
Walter didn't want to do a gingerbread man, because they've already had to do gingerbread man, I think, twice in this season. But do a gingerbread man general, that's what was asked for.
So yeah.
He has to go back and just redo that one entirely.
Or I would say just go with ginger as meaning red hair, and make him a skinny guy with a lot of red hair.
I don't know that that's crazy enough for Wonderland.
You don't know what the hair looks like yet.
All right, fair enough. I have seen what the Lollipop Ballerina looked like, and it was a whole bunch of candy stuck to a head.
Yeah, it was a... What do you call those things? A shroud?
Okay.
It was a head shroud.
Sure.
Is it called a...
Cowl.
Cowl. It was a cowl. They call it a cowl. And it went over the head, and it had it had lollipops and other candy sculpted in it, but the main front of it had three big ice cream cones.
Like, stuck in upside down?
So they look like horns or like part of a crown.
Yeah, and the ice cream is...
And it was no good.
Yeah.
Because it's the Lollipop Ballerina, not the ice cream ballerina. And you couldn't see the lollipops because they were blocked off by the cones. And the face makeup was kind of a mess, too.
So I think the gimmick was supposed to be, this is a room where there are candy people. There's a gingerbread man. There's a lollipop lady. But the gingerbread man, like I say, just looked like a fat guy. And the lollipop lady had all sorts of extra candy. Like, don't add extra ideas.
No.
Lollipop, ballerina. Add those two together. Mix it up.
Right. Exactly.
A similar problem with Jordan. His Dapper Grasshopper, I liked the shape of the grasshopper. Mostly they were just worried about hiding the human eyes that are sticking...
Right. They are sticking out the grasshopper's nostrils, which is easy enough to hide. They just need to put some mesh in.
Like, done. That's a solved problem.
Yeah. And
the other one was a spring fox, which, first of all...
Is that a thing?
Yeah. Like, they decided that their fox was going to be bouncy. Unlike the grasshopper? Grasshoppers are famously bouncy.
Yeah, the grasshopper's definitely the bouncy one in this situation. The fox, I guess baby foxes are kind of bouncy.
Okay, that sounds cute. I'm into that.
I'll show you some YouTube videos
later.
Great,
that sounds fantastic. Yeah. But the face of the fox that they made just wasn't pointy at all.
No, it didn't look like a fox. The profile didn't look like a fox. The one thing we know about a fox makeup is that it involves a long pointy nose.
Foxes are famously pointy.
This looked like a cat or a bunny, not famously pointy.
So he was reluctant to resculpt his whole thing, but Michael Westmore suggested he make a prosthetic nose to go on top of
the nose you've already gotten. It'll save you time.
So that might work. And then that left Matt, who did the Tin Jester and Porcelain Prince.
The Tin Jester I really liked.
The Tin Jester, the model inside it is Megan, who... is clearly the best model. It is amazing
Monty
to me.
Monty just has a crush on her.
She's so good. Mm-hmm. It took me a few seasons before I really realized so often the best look is the one with this model inside it.
Yeah, because she is very good at portraying that.
She never stops acting. While they were walking from the makeup
from
room
the van to makeup to the room to the van, she was already in character as the jester. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. And when they added a piece of business on the set where what if we had a key in her back and the other guy winds her up and Megan had moves for that already.
Yeah.
Like, she's very good.
She is very good.
The other one though, the Porcelain Prince, I liked the sculpt a lot, but once they painted it, it was just like flat white and the cracks were...
There was no shadowing in the cracks. They were just... It was like flat white with black cracks painted on it. And
it didn't reflect like porcelain. It reflected like white paint. And we've seen really good cracked porcelain doll effects. And
I wanted to see that. I wanted them to do the porcelain in a flesh color and then make the cracks small and spreading instead of just... Here's a pointy white mask with some cracks drawn on it.
And the way they did the cracks, they had like specific impact points. So it was like somebody had hit it with a hammer a couple of times.
Right.
Which
I like the idea of. If you're going to have someone cracked, it's nice to know that the cracks are spreading from this point.
Yeah.
But at the same time, those cracks need to look delicate and small, or else what's even holding them together?
This is the down moment, hopefully next week, for the actual finale. So sad. All of these issues will be addressed. We are told that a special twist is coming. That twist will 100% be that they have to do a third look.
They always have to do a third look.
You always got to do an extra dress. It's always...
It's always an extra look.
Yeah.
Every show that has a look in the finale, you got to do another.
Now, as advertised last episode... The Great Food Truck Race is back.
You are more excited about this than any other human on the planet.
I'm trying
and I
to
love you for that.
Hype up the next segment. Make it exciting.
We've watched two episodes.
Which means the season is probably like a quarter over because...
Yeah, it does not. It's a fast-moving show. Those food trucks can really roll when they need to.
The days of this show taking its time and going all the way across the country are over. Now it's the Wild West season, which means they started in L.A., and now they've gone to Las Vegas, and they're already turning south and going to Phoenix next week.
Yeah. And then,
because the travel really isn't the interesting part. Although, all right, I wanted to cover this real quick.
All right. Cover it.
We don't get to see how much work it is to tie everything down before you start driving these trucks.
They can't just be... I know. They can't just have vats of hot oil, like... sloshing around back there, right?
You wouldn't think so, but
I'm sure they have like lids that they have to screw down.
Yeah,
over the oil when it's not hot.
I'm worried about like a grocery bag in the back of my car, And sometimes these people are like, well, let's just move a couple of blocks. Your truck is full of prepared food.
And hot oil.
Yeah.
I'm mostly concerned about the hot oil situation.
That's reasonable. All right. So let's go through the teams real quick and give me your first thought after having watched two episodes. Mobile Mushu.
Cute girls. They serve things on tortillas, which are not actually mushu, but whatever.
Yeah. Moo is spelled M-O-O, so I thought maybe they were going to be beef-oriented, but...
No, I don't. I just think they don't...
Or oriented. Just Wing It.
Oh, those guys are bros.
They're the team that met on Worst Cooks in America, which I wish they could have just named their truck that. That would have been amazing.
Wing Bros. That's who those guys are.
Yeah, they are allegedly a wing truck, but we're going to cover that in a second.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk a lot about wings.
Well, we're... All right. New England Grill?
Ugh.
They have
that lady.
She is a stand-up comic from Boston.
She is super annoying.
Because, here's my guess... She feels the need when the cameras are on her and her team needs customers to kind of be on, but she doesn't have material.
Oh.
So she's just yelling at people, hey, get a fritta. You want a fritta?
Yeah.
Ugh. Heroes on the Half Shell. Now, listener.
Oh, neck tattoo.
Imagine what Heroes on the Half Shell makes you think of. Is it turtles? Well, you're wrong.
No, it's a sandwich, but only half a sandwich.
See, it's a hero, but... Only on one half of the bread.
Which is scooped out and made a hollow so they can fill it with bread fillings.
Hence, half shell.
Yes.
This is too much concept. Also, they have one of
also,
their people...
Also, they're not really making hero sandwiches. They're like tuna salad or something.
Their signature sandwich is a tuna melt.
Oh, gross. I just found out what a tuna melt was a little while ago, because tuna kind of grosses me out anyway. So...
Hot tuna, especially because they were trying to sell it in Las Vegas in the afternoon.
As street food. The last thing you want is some hot, gross, canned fish.
Also, there's an annoying guy on that team.
And they've got this guy with a neck tattoo and some facial tattoos. And no.
Okay.
He's gross.
Team Sassy Soul.
Oh, I love those. Those were some African-American ladies who were, in fact, sassy, and their food looked amazing and delicious.
They made soul food.
Yeah.
Buns and thighs.
Strippers?
Nope. In principle, what they make is sandwiches with chicken thigh in them on a bun.
Okay.
And Chops Shop.
Chops Shop. They make pork chops.
No, that is owned by a guy named Brian who insists his nickname is Chops. So they make Texas food.
Okay. Well, if that makes sense.
Here's the thing, though. One of the flaws of the Great Food Truck Race is that they love making their teams do specific challenges. Like, hey, everybody has to cook beef today. Today you're only selling beef. Or today you're only selling shrimp.
Right. Or you're only selling The one they did the first time was you're selling a random bit of meat.
Yeah.
You have to bid on the kind of meat you want or something.
Yeah, that one, everybody got a different cut of beef. There was like ground chuck, New York strip, or oxtail if you didn't bid. The problem is, you roll into town with a truck called Just Wing It. People are expecting you to have wings.
You have pictures of chickens all over your truck.
Also, just because you think you can have a food truck based on wings doesn't mean you are asserting you can cook any sort of food anyone throws at you.
No, they're wing guys. They were on America's Worst Chefs. They have learned to make one thing.
So the challenges are really specific, and there's no guarantee at all that the people on the show can cook it. And it's going to be weird coming out of a truck with a specific name. So for that to be good on this show, you want a generic name, like Sassy Soul. Well, that could be anything.
It could be anything.
The problem is, in the real world, I go the other way. I want a truck that's very specific.
Right. Like, we have a place on the corner of us that has a different food truck, like, most nights of the week. And I drive past and I'll take a look over to see what the food truck is, and it's just called, like, Friendly Bread or something.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what I'm getting. I want to look over there and see a name like Just Wing It. And I go, oh, that's a truck. It sells wings.
Right.
In the real world, your advertising can be specific and make people driving by understand what you're getting.
Yeah.
But on this show, that's actively bad for you.
Right. I will go to a truck labeled Cheese Wizard.
Yeah.
They do grilled cheese sandwiches, but also I like the concept of a cheese wizard because I'm very fond of cheese.
What are some spells the cheese wizard would cast? Like fondue ball?
I was thinking repel monster.
Ah, there we go. Got there. Big bees grasping. No, this show is on hold while we think of two more cheese-based magic spells. Okay, and we're going to keep talking so that it's not boring.
That's right, we don't want to bore you.
So we both have a pretty good grounding in D&D and magic cards. Certainly.
I have a good grounding in cheese.
Yeah, so where is it? Where's
good... Gouda's Grasping Swiss?
Yeah, that's great. That's two spells. We got one more coming. Well, here's one. There is...
Yes, dear.
Okay. Well, what's happening right now in my head is I am trying to simultaneously go through the Monty Python cheese shop sketch... and every Magic the Gathering card.
Well, I'm going through some Nick Park cartoons.
Awesome, good.
And also trying to remember anything that was a spell in D&D, because I haven't played D&D for a while, and all I can think of is Fireball.
Well, I'm going to go with Nacho Mama's Magic Missile.
Whoa.
All right, got there. And let's move on. So, the Great Food Truck Race... in week one, only one team made any money because nobody knows what they're doing. These are all completely...
Oh, yeah, these guys don't have food trucks in real life.
So
they've just been given these trucks and hopefully told to get a driver's license.
So there was a challenge of some sort. I don't remember what. I don't care. And the winning team of that got $200.
Right.
They were Mobile Mushu, and they finished...
Oh, it was, the challenge was you have to squeeze a bucket full of lemon, of fresh squeezed orange juice and not have any pits in it.
I think that was just, was that what gave them
$200? And then whoever finished first got $200.
I thought that was just...
And the keys to their truck.
Well, Mobile Mushu finished with $272, which means without winning the challenge, they would have had $72. The other teams lost $91, $300, $300, $300, $350, and then Sassy Soul went home.
Which makes me sad, because they were one of my favorite teams. I really liked them. They had a good energy, and their food looked delicious.
Yep, but they did not do well in this weird, weird show with its absurd rules.
Yeah, there are absurd rules. There are secret rules to this show that viewers aren't told about.
Yeah, I hate that.
Me too.
I want to know all the rules. In week two, they went to Las Vegas, which is not a great place for a food truck, I don't think.
Well, nobody... Okay, during the day, people live in the... stay inside the air-conditioned casinos.
So that they do not catch fire
immediately. So that they do not immediately catch fire on walking outside.
Yes.
Like, at the end of it, when they were reading out the winners, it was at night, and everyone was visibly shivering and freezing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, first of all, Las Vegas is a place where people don't want to eat outside because they will burst into flame.
And second, if you do want to eat, you have many, many options. Like
inexpensive options.
One of the teams managed to find a spot to post up very near the strip. So near the strip that you're half a block from the Bellagio.
And they had a big... Okay, and in one shot, there's a... picture of a truck sitting there, and it's got, like, po' boy sandwiches, $12. And when the camera pulls back, you can see the marquee of a restaurant behind that's like, full steak dinner, $10.99.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that...
You're not impressing me with your lobster fritters when there are giant billboards everywhere saying 200-pound lobsters, $5.
Exactly.
Like, there are all-you-can-eat buffets everywhere I look.
And, or I can buy this lobster fritter from this loud, this obnoxious woman who's yelling at me in the street.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get yelled at in the street. It is Las Vegas.
Well, yeah.
So, the winner of week two was Buns and Thighs, with Mobile Mushu coming second. And I noticed that Buns and Thighs came second in the previous week, which means... All right, I'm looking at the two lists. Week one and week two, Mobile Mushu and Buns and Thighs were one and two, swapping places. Then New England Grill was third both times. Then Just Wing It both weeks. So already there's some real separation going on.
Oh, yeah.
It does remind me, in the second or third season, one team came first every single week. And it was the most amazing reality show performance I had ever seen. That was that Banh Mi truck.
Oh, those guys were killing it.
It was three ladies. At least one of them had an MBA and was a murderer at it.
Yeah. Yeah, they were so good.
This was before...
They won everything. The next season they changed the format for some reason.
This was before the complete social media dominance. Like, a couple seasons ago, it was all about... We're going on social media, Instagram, 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 and there were these very suspicious lines of 200 people everywhere everybody went.
Uh-huh.
That is not the case this time. Here we got somebody posting Instagram and their nephew.
As a last effort.
And her nephew showed up.
And her uncle.
Yeah, great.
Her uncle and her nephew showed up. She's like, I've got so much family in this area. Everybody's going to come out. And then it's like, that's in the morning. And then late at night, she's like, look, my nephew's here.
Yeah.
And it was so sad.
But already, I think it's Mobile Mushu and Buns and Thighs are the two best teams pretty strongly.
Yeah.
Sassy Soul went home week one. Heroes on a Half Shell went home week two. And we were kind of glad about that. And Chop's shop is hanging on by the skin of its teeth at this point.
Here's the things that annoy me about Heroes on the Half Shell.
Okay.
First of all, their name.
Right.
If they're not serving up turtle steaks, they cannot use that name. And also, it's probably probably copyrighted by somebody.
It's 100% copyright.
It is 100% copyright infringement. Second off, do I want a sandwich that consists of one half of a bun that has been hollowed out and filled with glop?
Yeah.
It's like a bread bowl, except it doesn't have delicious soup in it.
If it's a hero, that means it's full of a whole lot of ingredients, and you need both sides of the bun to hold it together. And even then, you're only going to hold like 80% of it.
Right. A hero sandwich is a specific thing. It's not a tuna melt.
And by the way, you're serving tuna melts out of your food truck?
In the middle of the heat in Las Vegas?
Okay. Well, you're not anymore. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I do want to go back to my little story about the Banh Mi truck. They did not win that season. They won every challenge except the very last one. Ugh. The finale had some real weird rules and a different team won. But they ran off 8 straight wins, winning every single challenge.
Yeah, I have a feeling those weird rules they made during the last episode were just to keep them from having a complete sweep.
However, with all these complaints about the ridiculous rules of the Great Food Truck Race, I think it is a super fun show, and I am looking forward to watching more and more of it.
Yay!
I will be sad when Face Off goes away, which will be next week.
I will be so sad. I keep hoping maybe the other face-off show, they'll come back with that for a while.
Oh, the Game Face face-off? I was not really into that.
Me neither, but it was something.
Yeah.
I need to watch people build monsters for my pleasure.
I'll tell you what I really want to bring back is the Jim Henson Creature Shop one. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, they had a lot of good creature components lying around there.
But for now, I believe that will do us. Rias, what would you like to plug?
I have my own podcast called The Night Library. which is at www.nightlibrary.org. And we just read we read horror novels and then we talk about them. It's me and my co-host Jillian Venters from Gothic Charm School and an assortment of guests.
What was your last episode about?
Our last episode was about Salem's Lot by Stephen King.
Eek! Yeah. Boy, the name terrifies me.
It's actually so well written, especially after you've read some of the other books we've read for the podcast. You're like, Stephen King is a breath of fresh air.
And what's weird is a lot of the writers that you talk about, way more prolific than old lazy bone Stephen King.
Oh yeah, the first book we read is about a guy who is dead. And we were at Fred Meyer's the other day, and there were like 3 shelves of books written by him.
It's William Johnstone. He wrote some horror novels and a million westerns.
Right, and then when he died, he allowed a nephew, I believe, to take over the legacy. He hid his death for 2 years. So there's that.
Got anything else you want to plug?
There's also a podcast called Don't Read the Latin. And I'm a co-host of that. It's with someone named Jennifer Lovely. We just talk about horror movies every week.
Horror books and horror movies. I like it.
Yeah.
Thematic.
I'm digging out a genre. And a grave.
Exciting. And ominous. I'm going to plug just the general podcast, The Incomparable. Right now, The Incomparable is talking about the Summer of Marvel. Going through all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, 1 to 3 at a time. I haven't been on a lot of those episodes. I will at some point be, but I'm on some episodes of The Incomparable.
We lead very disparate podcast lives, don't we?
I was recently on an episode of Extra Hot Great, television podcast.
I know what that's...
I forget what we were talking about, but it was something fun.
Must have been great and extra hot.
That's right. And I think that will do it for us until next week.
All right. Totes this everybody.
Oh, I got it. Wait.
Oh, no.
Wait.
Uh-oh.
No, that's it. Bye.